The rest of the world is watching this. So are our adversaries. And they're saying, all right, like, if this is the leader of the free world and effectively the most powerful office in the world, how powerful really is it?
Biden acts like all of these things are just happening to him, but they're happening because of him. Right. He acts like he has no power whatsoever. He ran like he was going to do all these things, and now he gets off and goes, I can't do anything. And the border is a great example of that.
I know a lot of 81-year-olds that are thriving and doing great, and you look to them as a great sage wisdom. But for him, he's not that. He's not able to embody that. He looks frail. He looks weak. He doesn't look like a wise old man. He looks like someone that fumbles and stumbles. And that's a challenge. Unless they can make that shift to make him feel like a wise sage, then it's not going to be good.
All right, folks, it's Friday Eve here on the Sean Spicer Show, but more importantly, it's the State of the Union tonight. Does Joe Biden stand in the same place for 30-plus minutes and read off a teleprompter without any gaffes? That's where the bar is at. We're going to break it all down with an amazing panel. I was at an event last night with Don Jr. in D.C. People coming together to raise money for the president. The general election is on. But before I get to that, before I get to this amazing panel, which is Seth Denson, who is a contributor at Newsmax, my former co-host at Newsmax, Lindy Keith, who is now the co-anchor of News on Merritt Street, and Hogan Gidley, the vice chair for the Center for Election Integrity at the America First Policy Institute, as well as a former deputy White House press secretary. I want to tell you about two of the great sponsors that make this show possible before we get into it with the panel. In a time of emergency or crisis, are you going to be ready? I know I am, because I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X in my house. That means when crisis hits, I can power everything from a refrigerator to tablets to medical devices to make sure that me and my family and my loved ones are taken care of. And if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, you can be ready too. As I said, you can power your refrigerator. You can bring the Patriot Power Generator 2000X into your house. No dangerous fumes, no noise. The beautiful thing about it is that it's powered off solar panels that come free with it. You just put the solar panels out, the sun regenerates the Patriot Power Generator 2000X, and there you go. No gas to bring in, no fumes to deal with. The Patriot Power Generator takes care of you and all of your needs. So if you're out of power for hours, days, weeks, even months, you and your family will be protected during a time of crisis. Don't wait for that time to happen. Get ahead of the curve like I did. Get a Patriot Power Generator and the free solar panel that comes with it by going to 4patriots.com/Spicer so that you will be ready to take care of you and your family when a crisis occurs. All right, folks, during these uncertain times, if you're looking to secure your financial future, call my friends at Bishop Gold. Call 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean. I did it. This is where you want to add precious metals to your investment strategy. So if you have an old 401k, an IRA, or just want to enhance and expand your investments, precious metals is the way to go. I called them. I had a discussion with them about my needs, where I was, what my long-term goals were, and they put a plan together for me. Now, you can keep the metals. They can keep them for you. They'll tell you how to liquidate them if you want to do that at some point down the road. But the bottom line is this. These are the people that I trust. I know there's a ton of commercials out there about precious metals and getting involved in gold and silver. Bishop Golds are the people that I talk to, that I trust for my own investments. I know them. I trust them. They've got the experience. They live by integrity. Call them at 1-844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to begin your journey with financial metals and get a free gift if you do that. So go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to talk to my friends at Bishop Gold Group. All right, guys, a big day here in Washington. Thanks for joining me. I have got a lot that I want to get to, but obviously the big thing is the State of the Union. I tweeted out earlier today, breaking news out of the White House. They will have two intermissions tonight. After the first 7 minutes, there'll be a 40-minute break. He will come back out for 6 or 7 more minutes, then another 30-minute nap, and then come back out. Honest to God, I want to go around there. It's funny how, Seth, I'll start with you. The expectation for this State of the Union is like, Biden's going to go for 30 minutes strong. Like, this is somehow a big feat for the leader of a free world to stand in front of a rostrum and speak from a teleprompter for 30 minutes, we're supposed to be like, wow, good job.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where I don't think anymore, Sean, we care about what he's going to say. It's just, what is he going to say? Or how long is he going to say it? Or how many are we going to have in the process? And, you know, the reality of that, though, is we're doing an unfair justice to this because we're setting the bar so stinking low.
Yeah.
All he has to do is just stand upright for 45 minutes and we're going to go, wow, he's still got it. And so I think that's on us because we all are kind of expecting this. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? I started drinking coffee way early this morning just so I can stay awake for it. Yeah. So we'll see what the president did.
Hogan, the thing that I thought was funny, I said this the other night after the Super Tuesday, Trump got up and just spoke for 20 minutes. He talked about his record. He talked about his accomplishments, no notes, no nothing. Corinne Jean-Pierre yesterday in the press briefing room was asked about why Biden needs notes for basic introductions. It's like, this is your wife. Her name is Jill. You've been married for the, I mean, like, it's somewhat embarrassing. And she kind of just pushed it aside. But to Seth's point, I mean, we do have a very low bar.
Yeah. But I mean, what's worse, having notes for those introductions or looking at the notes and still being unable to complete the introduction? It's really, really, really bad. And what I want to warn everyone is don't put it so low, right, that all he has to do is complete a sentence and then we all stand up and cheer for it. The fact is, you point out, he's the leader of the free world. He ought to be able to get up there and have these conversations with the American people and the globe. And someone overseas once said, it turns out it's important to more than just the American people who the president of the United States is. And that accentuates the fact that when Joe Biden opens his mouth, when Bill Clinton or Trump or Bush opens their mouth, it's not just the American press corps hears it. It's not just the American people. It's the world. And so a lot of people are looking at this president to see just how feeble is he. And one of the things that kind of was terrifying to me, because on a global stage, regardless of party, you want your president to at least appear strong. That HER report, as we sit around and talk about what we see Joe Biden doing in real time, how he can't get through questions, he has the scripted answers in front of him. He can't get through them. He messes up names, world leaders, et cetera, holds a press conference to show he's stable, only to show he's not stable. That HER report showed you what was going on behind the scenes, right, which is what we're all wondering. And now we see documented cases of him just not being able to do simple things in his own mind. It is terrifying. And this speech tonight, while most of these speeches, as you know, Sean, are symbolic. A lot of people in D.C. think they need to be done away with. They should just submit it as a letter like they used to in the old days and say the heck with it. This is important for Joe Biden because his cognitive decline has been on display. His capabilities and lack thereof have been on display. He's going to have to try and fly in the face of that tonight. So expect him to be drugged up, amped up to some degree to get out there and give this speech.
I know that we're focusing on time as a metric. Is that, I mean, I guess rightly so to some degree, but what else should we judge whether tonight's a successful speech or not? And frankly, should we care? I've been saying all along, it's a speech. I don't know why it'll make that big of a deal. It's almost like a sugar high.
Yeah, I think, you know, listen, we've had presidents over periods of time that couldn't seem to string two words together and make sense of it. But I think it's in the how the delivery is really important here. And what I mean by that is, unfortunately, we've all known people who have cognitive decline, and you hear their speech and you hear kind of how they're delivering it. Maybe their brain isn't keeping up with their mouth. And I think it really does lend to what Hogan said, which is the rest of the world is watching this. So are our adversaries. And they're saying, all right, like if this is the leader of the free world and effectively the most powerful office in the world, how powerful really is it? And I think just to kind of shift from there too, from a voter's perspective, I think there's a fairly decent chance that the Biden administration takes the same playbook they did the last go round, which is don't let him talk, don't let him interact with anybody, keep him in a basement. Now it'll just be a bunker. And the whole methodology is just he's not Trump, which means we may not get a debate, although, you know, we have that conversation. But where I'm going with that is this is the American public's first option to really see what he brings and ultimately determine whether there is or isn't a debate. Does he have it? And I think that's what we've got to look for.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Lindsay, Keith, do we have you?
I think I'm back. Sorry, guys.
We've been debating time, and what is the metric of success or failure that you're going to judge tonight's speech on?
You know, I think obviously everyone's looking at the age number, but the key thing for me really is, You know, does he have a vision for the future? When I think about Joe Biden's presidency, there's really nothing that comes to mind. And I think that's been one of his struggles, his whole presidency. He's been trying to convince the American people that he's done so much for them. Look at everything I've done. But when you talk to voters, they can't name almost one thing that he's done. And so I think that that has been a real disconnect. And you even look at the economy. He's tried to prove how great the economy is. But if you talk to the American people, they're not feeling that. And the guy who says that he's so empathetic, really, and empathizes with people, has not done that well when it comes to things that American people are feeling. And he's trying to cram down, I've done the infrastructure bill, you know, I've done all these things for you to improve stuff. But again, people aren't seeing it. So to me, can he really give us an idea of a vision? Because so far, you know, obviously every presidency is determined, do you want more, four more years of this? And I think most people would say no. So for me, that's it. Because obviously everyone knows age is a factor. But to me, the bigger factor is, do you have a vision for the next 4 years beyond what we've seen the last few? Because that has not been a clear vision.
So Hogan, going off, I mean, you've helped prepare some of these. To what Lindsay's saying, I think he's, I mean, getting up there and delivering a speech that's been written for you by everybody, I don't doubt that tonight's actually could be a good speech. Who cares? He's going to try to pretend. He's going to talk about, my guess is, reaching out to Republicans, trying to solve problems. And it's like, dude, this isn't your first rodeo. You've been in office for 3 years. You haven't done any of this. I mean, Lindsay's point is he's going to look towards the future and try to sell us on something. But the reality is that he hasn't done it. And I just the question whether or not he thinks that we're that stupid, or that he just thinks the press corps is going to carry his water for him, or what?
Well, and I would argue it's not just 3 years, although as president, yes, half of a century this guy's been in office. And he's talking about,
by the way, he probably remembers, he's like, remember when I got into Congress and we could deliver those things by letter? That's how it used to be.
That's exactly right. Using a quill and a ink. Listen, he obviously has a lot of problems with what the perception and reality is versus what he's trying to tell people. And the argument from the White House for a long time, and you know, Sean, they always blame the comms guys, like it's always our fault for communications. It's Pelosi and others saying, we just haven't sold it right, right?
Right.
You're paying more for gas and for groceries and for healthcare and for cars and for mortgages and for rental rates. But that's not, it really is actually good for you. It's actually good. You're not, what you're feeling out there, you see lowering amounts of money in your check, that's not a real thing. We're just messaging it wrong. The problem is Joe Biden is clashing with reality here. And what he's going to try to paint tonight is a picture of a country that was in such steep decline, rock bottom, and then he came in somehow and lifted us all out of this big malaise and this big problem. The problem is that's just not real.
Yeah.
The left, though, I just was in New York doing some TV up there. They believe that. They believe that he has done all these wonderful things. It's really just a they hate Trump situation as opposed to loving Joe Biden. But Joe Biden is, I would imagine, not just going to paint a rosy picture of where things are now. He's going to paint another picture that he's done in previous speeches about how dangerous it would be to go with anybody else but him. I mean, he's gone as far as to say anyone who votes for Donald Trump or anyone who doesn't support him is somehow Hitler. I mean, that's basically what he's saying every time he goes out and speaks. So I'll be interested to see how he's going to reach across the aisle as he is supposed to be able to do. At least that's what we were told he could do by the mainstream media. He can't do that. He has never been able to do that. And so is he going to go after the other side of the aisle in a way that is so negative and so vitriolic and so evil and so divisive? Or is he going to try and paint a big kumbaya thing and do the reset that a lot of people in the media keep saying he's going to do? I don't know, but I would imagine, as you said, it's just a speech.
Yeah.
Words don't matter that much when you compare them to his actions that have really hurt all Americans.
It's a sugar high. He might get good results tonight, and by Saturday it's gone. I remember, by the way, just total fun story. President Trump crushed it on his first joint address. We're literally reading comments to him. I've posted some of the photos before on Instagram. Maybe I'll pull up some again. And we're back at the White House. We went up into the residence and we're showing him. I mean, David Axelrod, Van Jones, all these people on CNN are telling him, great job. And then it was like 24 hours later, he's still getting kudos for this. And he starts tweeting out about like Mika Brzezinski. And I was just like, there it goes. And it's just like, you know, it only lasts for so long. But Seth, to Hogan's point, let me read to you what.
Hey, Sean.
Yeah.
Just real quick. There was a stat though, right after that speech, as I recall, and after all the State of the Union with Trump, it was like, if you just heard the speech on the radio or TV without commentary, it was like 78, 82% of the people loved it. But if you heard it on CNN, MSNBC, and through the lens and the filter, it was like 30% of the people loved it.
Right.
So it showed you, just listening to it, you were like, yes, that's great. It was all the commentary and all the negativity that brought down the popularity of it.
It was like the Nixon-Kennedy debate.
Yes.
So Seth, you're the economics guy. Let me read you that apparently White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients is leaking out the goal and all these insights from the speech. Axios has an exclusive: Biden plans feisty economic reset. Let me read you the start of it. President Biden will use tonight's State of the Union to address to admit that prices are still too high in some areas, but argue that things were worse under President Trump. So gas prices were down, inflation was down, interest rates were down, unemployment was down. First of all, these guys in the media are like, yes, thank you, can I have another? What is up with that? Every statistic proves that that's a false narrative. Are they just trying to think that people are going to buy this? Do they think the press will carry their water? Do they think that we don't remember? Is he just trying to paint an alternative reality? I don't understand literally how you could pull that off.
Well, they're trying to, listen, get your lipstick ready. I mean, Maybelline, come on, because there's going to be more lipstick put on this pig that is the economy than we've ever seen before tonight. And I was actually looking up some of those stats. And we talk about inflation and core inflation, but the reality is there's what we call essential inflation, the things I have to live, right? I got to have food. Well, guess what? Since the president has taken office, it has compounded increased, and it's sitting here today at a compounded increase of 23%.
Right.
And energy, which I need not only to get to work and heat my house, but also all the stuff that I buy, it gets delivered on energy. Even those EV vehicles, guess what? They're getting charged with natural fossil fuels. All of that, 43% compounded increase since this president has taken office. And, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this, too. When President Biden was running as candidate Biden the first time around, you know, he's talking about the stock market. Stock market only matters to the elite. It doesn't really matter. Now he's out there saying, look how great the stock market is. Well, guess what? The stock market ain't the supermarket. And right now, voters aren't voting on the aggregate this time around, meaning that they are individually going into that booth and thinking about where are they in their world today. And I think what this president is going to try to do today is paint that lipstick and hope that people vote in the aggregate. But they're not going to. Because they're going to look at where they are, and the supermarket means a lot more than the stock market right now.
I agree. This is where they're missing the boat on this. Lindsay, the other angle that apparently he's trying to go after tonight is to say that Republicans created the border crisis that he is now solving. You're down there in Texas. I'm like, what else do you guys want? I'm going, of all the things that you pick, I don't know. I mean, maybe that is a joke and it's trying to get us to focus on something else. You're literally going to say that the border, he undid 95 executive actions of President Trump. He was proud of it. He was proud of, they call him newcomers. You guys down in Texas, remember that the next time that you see that, call him, be like, hello, newcomer. Welcome. Come to the social tomorrow night. We've got some nice mixers and chips, but the chips aren't as big because of shrinkflation. But come on in, newcomers.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, we used to talk about this on our show that Democrats love to flip the narrative and they're really good at framing a message. And that's what you're seeing here. He's trying to flip the script and act like it's not his fault when he's ignored it essentially until the last few weeks when he's realized it's become almost in tandem with people caring about the economy and how they're voting because it's become such a pervasive issue in our country. And so he all of a sudden is paying attention and acting like this is something that he cares about when all along, to your point, since day one, he didn't care about. You know, the interesting thing as well, I was reading an op-ed from young voters who were actually upset with him about the border for opposite reasons, people who hoped that he would help create a path to citizenship, which he also hasn't done. So I think he's making a lot of people mad on both sides by trying to find that quote unquote middle ground. He's actually frustrating both sides. And the right knows that he's lying. And the left is mad that he hasn't done what they thought he would do with the border and open it up, but also make it accessible to people, which he hasn't done. He's created a nightmare by all the things that he says in this bill now that he should have been doing in the beginning, adding more judges, adding more people at the border, creating, if he really wanted to have a quote unquote open border, then he should have put the infrastructure in place, which he didn't. He just put no rules in place, which we were seeing now, which is lawlessness. So I think it's really going to come back to bite him in the end by trying to play cute and acting like this isn't his fault when it's very clear that it is his fault. I mean, all along, remember, they wouldn't call this a crisis at the border. They would say,
not a crisis.
So I think the fact that he's probably going to come strong on that tonight, it's going to look silly to most people.
You do it on the heels of them admitting that they flew on airplanes 320,000 people in from other countries. You can't be like, I'm tough on the border. I just flew a third of the state of Rhode Island and Delaware into the U.S. Hogan, I want to ask you this and pivot just to the campaign for a second. Obviously, we are now in the general election. Nikki Haley, you know, I keep joking. She says she dropped out, but that was the equivalent of saying I quit after someone tells you you're fired. It was happening. We are pivoting now to the general election and a lot going on right now, but this is the earliest it's ever been.
Yeah.
What is that? Does that help or hurt because you have this added time?
Oh, gosh. You think voters are kind of sick and tired of this now? Wait till November. I mean, my goodness, longest election in history. You know, I think people are really tired of the current leadership. Obviously, you see that in poll numbers. They're concerned about the future of the country. You see that in poll numbers as well. They blame Biden for it, rightly so. You see that in poll numbers too. Where this goes, though, depends largely on where the candidates take it. The media is going to play a massive role. As we've talked about many times, the left controls all the levers, major levers of power and influence, Hollywood, big tech, colleges and universities, and of course the media. So they're going to try and make this about Trump. I think the election, though, if you saw Trump's speech after Mar-a-Lago, as we referenced here on Super Tuesday, in Mar-a-Lago on Super Tuesday, he was pointing out, here's where we were, here's where we are. Policies actually matter. And so if Trump continues to drill down and remind people where we were, because, you know, we used to have to point to Reagan and say, look how good it was in the 80s. This is like 2 years ago. We actually had affordable prices for all the goods and services we use. We didn't have wars breaking out all over the world. Cities weren't hellscapes where crime was running rampant. You weren't letting out murderers and rapists on the streets in these liberal cities like you were, like you are now. He can point to those differences. I think the American people are going to be sick and tired, but not necessarily of the campaign so much as sick and tired of the current administration and what they've done to the American people. And something Lindsay just said, I think, is vital. Biden acts like all of these things are just happening to him, but they're happening because of him. Right. He acts like he has no power whatsoever. He ran like he was going to do all these things, and now he gets off and goes, I can't do anything. And the border is a great example of that. It's not a crisis year one, not a crisis year two, not a crisis year three. And about halfway into year four, he's like, oh, it is a crisis and it's the Republicans' fault. No one believes that because he owned the reversal, bragged about the reversal of all the Trump policies, and the media applauded him. They gave it to him. They tethered the two together. They're inextricably linked. And now he comes out and says it's all Republicans' fault. I don't think the American people are going to buy that because they so vilified Trump, then they so glorified Biden for doing everything the opposite. Well, if you did things one way and you had a sane, rational border policy, low numbers of human trafficking, child smuggling, drugs, and now they're all spiked to the roof. If you do the opposite, what do you think? You're going to get those things. So I think on that issue and all the others, Trump continuing to drill down on the policy prescriptions that really made us more successful and gave us a brighter future, that's where this campaign needs to go. And that's why I think they'll bring the American people over to his side more.
Sean, to that point, because I think Hogan's hitting something that's really important here. Biden's going to get a taste of kind of his own medicine. He ran in 2020, because there was a lot going on, right? We had the post-George Floyd situation. You had COVID going on. The world seemed in a disarray. And he got to not have to run on anything he did, just saying, I'm not Trump. That issue, all these issues are because of him, and I'm going to get to come in and save it. Well, now you're looking at, I mean, massive geopolitical unrest across the globe, you know, an economic situation that except for a few key stocks. Everybody's going, what is happening? Right. And crime rampant, all the things that Hogan just listed, you own that now. Yeah. So you don't get the luxury of saying it was the other guy. It's yours. And he's going to have to defend that.
All right, guys, longtime watchers of the show know about my friend Leo Grillo. He founded Delta Rescue. You can check out the work at deltarescue.org. Leo rescued a Doberman. He named the Doberman Delta. That stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That became the beginning of what is now Delta Rescue. Delta Rescue is a no-kill sanctuary that for life, not for short terms. It's not a shelter. It is a no-kill sanctuary for life. They take care of malnutrition dogs, horses, cats that need veterinary care, support. They let them roam free. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out all of those facilities, the work that they do, some of the great videos that show you the interaction that they have with them and the support that they give these animals. But it doesn't happen. Leo's mission, in order to be fulfilled, these people like you and I to contribute $5, $10, $100, $1,000. If you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out the videos, but you can also donate. More to the point, if you really are an animal lover like I am and want to make this an enduring mission, check out the estate planning kit that Leo has on there and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your life's estate.
Do you remember those stickers people used to put on gas pumps, like, I don't know, like 6 months ago or 12
months
ago? I did that. But Lindsay, I want to get to a point that I think is interesting for the general election campaign. The big issue that Biden has, aside from the policy, is that people are concerned about his age. And it's not just I really do hate talking about the number, because I think you can be a sharp 80-year-old or 90-year-old. You can be physically fit. I see him all the time on like social media, dudes who are like working out. You can also be a frail 55-year-old. To me, though, people watch his or can see the mental acuity issues and look at the physical frailness. The campaign keeps saying, we just need to get him out more. And I'm like, dude, the guy can't make it up the short stairs. And where do you want to get him out to? Like, I feel like this is a nursing home. They're like, wheel him out to the garden, folks. Like, they're in a catch-22. They want to show him out doing stuff more. But unless it's like playing water aerobics with the other folks at the home, I don't know what you can have him do.
You know, it's a problem they don't have a solution for, because it's something that's not going to change. And he's not going to get any younger by the time we get to Election Day. And I think the problem is they keep saying they want to get him out there more, but they don't do it. And they don't do it unless it's a controlled environment like we'll see tonight. The shocking thing was to me that they didn't allow him to do the Super Bowl interview. To me, that was low-hanging fruit for them. They would have got the interview, a patty cake interview. It would have been nice, and they could have said, look what we're doing. Yep. So the fact that they're not doing those things tells me a greater picture. It's worse than we even see. And the fact that they're making all these adjustments already, changing his shoes, going to the short staircase on the plane, all those things. I mean, tonight, I wonder how short this speech will actually be, because you look at last year, he actually pulled together, and this is a perfect environment for him. But the thing for me is, and everyone says this, it's going to take one fall. But, you know, a lot of times the base is going to look past, like, whatever, he's old, but his ideas are what matter, like a good wine. That's great. But if you can't communicate those ideas clearly and execute on them, then it doesn't matter.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, that's, you know, to your point, I know a lot of 81-year-olds that are thriving and doing great, and you look to them as a great sage wisdom. But for him, he's not that. He's not able to embody that. He looks frail. He looks weak. He doesn't look like a wise old man. He looks like someone that fumbles and stumbles. And that's a challenge. Unless they can make that shift to make him feel like a wise sage, then it's not going to be good.
Funny thing is, you can't be a wise sage if everybody that knows you well, like Bob Gates and Obama, keep saying every decision you've made in foreign policy has been a disaster. The wise sage is the guy whose career or experience leads people to kind of go to them as Yoda in their elder statesman phase and say, oh, wise man, how do we do this? You did it so well before. He never was the guy that did it well in the first place. I don't know why we see him buying into this. Hogan, by the way, one analogy that Lindsay made me think of as she was talking about this was all these people go, you know, I love Trump policies. If he could only stop doing this, like somehow none of us realized that some of these tweets were an issue. It's like the same thing with the Biden campaign. It's like, how many times do they need to hear, if you only got him out there more? They're like, no kidding, dummies. Like, we just can't. Seth, I want to go back to you for a second, because you brought up the debates. Trump, after Super Tuesday, made it very clear. I want to debate Biden. Here's the kicker. All of these media institutions have been about democracy and the traditions and da-da-da, and Trump is so evil because he didn't go to the country club event that everybody goes to and the White House Correspondents' Dinner. But now when it comes to the debates, Biden won't answer the question, will he debate? Will he debate? He hasn't answered the question. I, to Lindsay's point about the low-hanging fruit, if you can't do this, that's going to really start to call into question. And Trump knows what he's doing. He's pushing that button.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw it. I think it was Wednesday of this week. You know, you brought up Mika earlier. Her husband, Joe, her main man, was talking about how sharp, this is the sharpest Joe Biden. He's the most mentally acute we've ever seen him. And I think a lot of us are going, huh?
This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever. Not a close second. And I've known him for years. The Brzezinskis have known him for 50 years. If it weren't the truth, I wouldn't say it.
All that to
say. That's just proof to me that how much pot Joe Scarborough smokes.
Well, but it's also proof to what you just said, which I think the media is going to try to carry some water for him on this and keep him out of this. But I don't see a world where he can't at least do one debate. I think that if he doesn't, that's throwing in the towel, because the American people are going to go, if you can't even get up and have a debate with Donald Trump or anybody for that matter, we got a problem. So maybe there's just one. And the last thing I'll say on this too, and I said it back in 2020, was, and President Trump is a great political mind, no doubt, but let Joe be Joe if you do get on that stage, because he's going to take care of it for you. And you just go, I'm going to yield my time to that guy.
Quick couple around the horns here. Debate occurs, a minimum of one, yes or no. Seth, you're saying yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hogan?
Yes. That's a question.
It's like my wife, yes. I want to go to dinner tonight.
Maybe.
Where are we going?
I have a caveat.
Yeah.
I think that if Trump is convicted, and we'll see what the Supreme Court does on any of his cases, then the Biden administration will say, we're not debating a felon. Yes. And we will not play part of that because we don't see this someone.
Damn, you
who
make a good point. Oh, that is so good. Oh,
she's right. That's why I was yes. I didn't know we could caveat.
So I think that's what it's dependent on. And I think, you know, depending on how far it goes, if there's no case, they'll say, well, we're waiting on the Supreme Court. So we are waiting on this. I think they have so many loopholes and so many outs. I actually
and
don't
get
think
covered,
they should debate, which will be sad.
That's
for the
thing.
American people, actually, they should debate. This is a longstanding tradition.
I wish you just hadn't said that out loud, because I think they're going to write that one down.
And they'll get covered. See, the press will go, yes. No way. Yes, Trump is so bad. Insurrection, J6, overturn election, blah, blah, blah. He shouldn't debate. That's the problem I'm concerned about. Oh, they're just going to give him cover.
That's God, that is bingo. All right. Now that you've upset me, next topic. No Labels is meeting tomorrow. The word that I'm getting is that they will announce that they will have a ticket. They just don't know who. So that was sort of the first threshold question for No Labels tomorrow when their convention convenes. Are we moving forward or not? And the rumor mill suggests that, yes, they just don't know who will be on the ticket. Seth, do you think that No Labels, let's just frame it this way, will have a formidable ticket this November?
No. I mean, they'll throw a name out there that everybody goes, oh, okay, you know, they're not Trump, they're not Biden, they're younger, right? And maybe they'll be a decent speech giver, but it's not going to be formidable. We're not ready for that. I don't see it.
I get it, but Hogan, here's what I'll add to this. I don't think people care, right? There are people, there are Republicans, especially in the suburban areas, who are Republicans that don't want to vote for Trump, but don't want to vote for Biden. They want to be able to say they voted for a Republican. This would give them the option. There are people who are Democrats that say, I don't want to vote for Biden. And so it's not a question of, do they like them? Do they think they're going to win? It gives them an out so that they can go to the country club and they can tee off and say, I didn't vote for them, but I still voted Republican, Muffy.
Yeah, look, the only way they put somebody forward is if it hurts the Republican candidate.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. It's like when people ask me about JFK running, JFK Jr., is he going to be a problem? I said, just watch the media. If the media don't like it, it means he's going to hurt Democrats. If they don't say anything and they go, this is part of democracy, it's because it's going to hurt us. Go back to Ross Perot. They didn't have a problem with any of that. That's just part of the deal because they knew it would take away from H.W. Bush, and it did, of course. So I'm saying I don't think they're going to put anybody forward unless they know it damages Trump. They couldn't care less about hurting Biden.
So, Lindsay, what do you think No Labels ends up doing?
They put themselves in a bind, ultimately, because they said the only reason they would put someone forward if it was a rematch, and that's what's happened. So I think that they don't have an option unless they want to go back on their word. My question is, who do they put forward? They're not going to put forward JFK. Larry Hogan's out.
The lesser of two Hogans, I might say.
Manchin said
you've
he wouldn't do it.
You've got better hair, by the way.
Yeah, sorry.
And Nikki Haley said she wouldn't do it. Now, the one thing I'll say on Nikki Haley, she also went back on her word on the RNC pledge. So what's to say that she wouldn't go back on her word to say, I won't run for No Labels now because I've seen that there's just a need. I'm the only person that can beat Biden. And so I see a case to be made that they could put her forward if she'd be willing.
I'll add another caveat to this. I think it matters who's on top of that ticket. So, and I agree with all of you guys, which is their goal right now is to stop Trump. It's not No Labels. It's one label. And that one label is stop Trump. And so they have to put a Republican as president and a VP as a Democrat, because that's the formula that hurts Trump. A Democrat up at the top and a Republican on the bottom. No one ever votes for the VP, and they wouldn't in this case. And I think that would hurt Democrats. So I think my answer is I think they go forward and they find some nominal, like it's like a Will Hurd. Will Hurd down in Texas who says, I'll do it. Adam Kinzinger. I don't know. I mean, one of these folks that's a never Trumper, they put him on the ticket and they go, okay, we have a Republican on top. Now you have a place to park your vote if you don't like him.
They also have to be somebody, Sean, who has no political aspirations to do anything in the future with the party.
You have like, to be that's like, a, how that's much money be a requirement. Do you have because you're done after this?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
What do you think about Chris Christie?
Oh, no. I don't.
No.
Chris, here's why, because this goes back to what Seth was saying. Chris Christie may not have a political future, but he has a business that to maintain. He does a lot of consulting, and you need to be able to, if you're a pariah, you're not going to be able to knock on any doors and say, hey, guys, like, don't worry, I can get so-and-so on the phone. You're still welcome to walk the halls of Capitol Hill. You're done. You have to have cash and a place to run to in, like, St. Bart's when you're done because no one's going to want to talk to you except for, like, the five. I mean, you'll be able to go around and do, like, League of Women Voters conventions, but that's about it. I think it was Seth that brought up RFK. Maybe here's the thing. This is what I have always maintained.
Okay, I said JFK.
Running for president doesn't matter. It's getting on the ballot that matters. And RFK up until recently had only been on the Utah ballot. Well, his super PAC just announced that Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona are now viable for him. They believe that they have the signatures and paid the fees, et cetera, to get on. Those are three critical states, a combined 60,000 states, 60,000 votes would have flipped all three of those states. So Hogan, I'm told by Seth that you brought this up, 60,000 votes in those three states alone. How big of a deal is it that he's on the ballot?
It's huge. It's everything because
and
this
who
is
does it hurt.
Oh, well, it hurts Joe Biden. This for is now. An RFK. Yes. I said JFK earlier. That would have hurt him too. But RFK for sure. Being alive helps. Him running the way he's running, saying the things he's saying, there are people on the Republican side who would go, yeah, the vaccine issue, yeah, he says some good stuff. Once Republicans start to see more and more of what he said in the past, some of the crazy things, I think he's going to kind of be persona non grata in large measure. But I do think there will be a protest vote. You saw this. It's not new per se, but you saw this in Michigan where people voted for, you know, an uncontested person over Joe Biden, of course, to try and make their decision known. I think this is an instance where I think it hurts Joe Biden. At first, I thought it was Trump more, but now with the media kind of clamoring about RFK and kind of keeping him at bay and at distance, I think it kind of is a tell at the hand they're being dealt here. They're concerned it's going to hurt Joe Biden. That's why I think it punishes more.
Lindsay, help or hurt RFK?
I think that
Trump
RFK hurts Trump more, actually, because I look at Nikki Haley dropping out and just talking to some people who are a swing voter, like suburban moms. They're open to JFK more than they are Biden, RFK. But they're absolutely never Trumpers. Right. And so I think it gives people who are, you know, conservative or a lot of parents who've been frustrated with education, they don't want to vote for Biden, but they also don't want to vote for Trump, and they want to do, you know, their civil duty. I think they won't show up, or they'll vote for RFK. And I ultimately think that that would hurt Trump.
Seth?
Yeah, I'm going to take the same points, but I'm going to flip them the other way around. And I think it absolutely hurts Joe Biden. And I think so in large part because there's people who won't ever pull the lever for Trump, to Lindsay's point. But the people that are going, I can't vote for Joe Biden in his current state, that gives them an option. It gives them an out, and it gives them someone. So I think it would hurt the president more than it would hurt President Trump.
All right. I got a few more things that I want to hit out in the couple minutes that we have left. And so let's... The House Oversight Committee announced that they have a tentative date for Hunter Biden, March 20th. Here's the catch, that it's not just Hunter Biden that would be at the witness table. It would be his old buddy, Tony Bobulinski, Devin Archer, and Jason Galanis. They would be there too. That changes the equation. I'm actually concerned. Like, I feel like the guys in the House Oversight Committee should have taken a win maybe and just said, let's have Hunter at the table. They wanted everyone else there to hold him accountable. Seth, does he show up on March 20th?
I don't think he does. I mean, he's already shown that he won't, and if he doesn't feel like it. But even if he does, I think it could be a mess. It's like jump ball. I don't know what ultimately happens from it. And that, it kind of, you know, you only want situations you can control. That is an uncontrollable situation.
I agree. Yeah, that's what I feel like. I haven't gotten a warm fuzzy that these guys have scripted their hearings well.
Yeah.
it's sort of like you're throwing a grenade out into the hearing room and being like, I hope that doesn't go out. Hogan, do you think he shows up, and how does it go?
Not a chance. I don't think he comes anywhere near that. I think even his attorneys, after his private testimony, pointed out in the public or leaked it, that they were kind of not sure if he should do something publicly. Yeah. I don't think you want that visual. The White House doesn't want that visual. It's obvious that Hunter Biden has coordinated with his dad. He basically said as much on many occasions on not just his business deals, but he's been very clear.
He's clear. He thinks he's doing his dad a favor. He knows the White House doesn't like this. Lindsay, I want to go to you on this, because here's the thing. If he doesn't, at some point, if they hold him in contempt of Congress, they've already put Peter Navarro in jail, and they're going after Bannon for defying subpoenas on the January 6th committee. The DOJ would be put in a very bad position. And that's the one thing that's dangling out there that says, oh yeah, Merrick Garland, you went after these guys. How do you then give an exception for the president's son?
I think he shows up at the Capitol steps like he did last time and does another press conference. And then he can say and try to plead something in court, say, well, I showed up. I didn't agree with the measures that they went forth. This is a kangaroo court, blah, 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 blah. But I think that he will show up. And to your point, he thinks he's doing his dad a favor. And so he thinks this will be a press conference for his father, improving how, you know, they have a great relationship and they've both done no wrong.
Right. Okay.
That's what I think that you'll see.
All right. This is the last question. Lindsay's going to remember this. On Saturday night, we spring forward, go back to daylight savings. It is a pet peeve of mine. I think we should end it. I will save her to the end. Seth Denson, should we get rid of this ridiculous, stupid biannual affair where we screw up our clocks? I didn't even change my last ones in my room. It still has an hour. I'm still an hour ahead because I refuse to do it. Should we stop the foolishness, Seth?
Yes. And if anybody wants to ultimately have a winning ticket, this is the campaign slogan, and it will unify across party lines.
End daylight savings, full life convictions for driving slow in the left lane and using a speakerphone in public. Death sentence. That's what I want to hear someone articulate, Hogan Gidley.
I am for the time switch. I like a nice little reset. Why not?
Okay.
It's an hour. Relax, everybody. Don't give me the I'm tired. It's an hour. Come on. Just suck it up, man.
My car's so old, I have to do it by hand. I don't like to do that. You know, I'm getting old and cranky. Lindsay Keith, how stupid is this time change?
I think I'm going to have to play both sides here because it used to bother me, but now everything's digital, so it updates itself.
I'm going to lose an hour
of sleep.
You know how cranky I'm going to be on Sunday? I got to get to church earlier.
That's the thing, and it always happens on a weekend, so it's like it can't be that bad.
It messes with my food, my diet. Like, no. It's like I got to eat lunch at the same time. What am I doing?
My diet.
All right, guys, thanks for being here. For everyone here, remember, tonight we're going live at 8:45 Eastern. We're going to do full color analysis of the State of the Union. I'll tell you who's coming into the chamber. I'll fact check the president in real time. We'll see Katie Britt's speech. You are not going to miss it. Subscribe to the channel right now. Hit that notification button. We'll be live on YouTube, Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, I don't know, whatever else you guys subscribe to, but we're live on everything tonight. Thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow. Roger Stone will be with us.